Hello, and welcome to the Indie Dev Podcast. I'm your host, David Voiles. The SNES, or Super Nintendo, was introduced to America 25 years ago today. With that console came a plethora of 16-bit JRPGs, which would inspire developers for generations to come. The distinct art style, sound effects, and turn-based gameplay is what attracted so many, not to mention the engaging storylines, which could last for 40-plus hours. 6 years ago, a group of developers banded together to create a whimsical 16-bit RPG in the vein of what came in the 90s, and built it on some of your favorite pop culture references and icons of the era. This title came to be known as Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden. Tales of Games is back at it again, and this time with Barkley 2, and then went to Kickstarter to get the word out. In total, they had more than 4,500 backers pledge more than $120,000 to get the game out the door. Today, I have with me Liam Raum and Jesse Saranovich from the team. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Greetings.
Salutations.
Perfect. That was probably the longest intro I've had thus far.
There's a lot of work. We've done a lot. We've got a lot done.
So we're accomplished.
Our origin story is pretty long, so you did a great job.
All right. So I've done my research. That's a good sign. So why don't
it was all wrong. It was all wrong, but it was lengthy. So
I figured some of the numbers are probably off here or there. So why don't you give me, you know, one paragraph pitch about what your game is or latest title, and then we'll go into how this all came to be.
Well, we technically have two games. I'm gonna let GZ, as I call Jesse, do the pitch for the game that's being released next week, our secret game. And I'll talk about Barkley too.
Secrets. I like secrets.
Yeah.
So, I mean, most developers are always working on a bunch of things. Even if they have a main project, there's always like a side project. And there's a bunch of us working on Barkley too, but we're releasing a game called Pause O Jello Crusade.
Pause O Jello Crusade.
That's right. It's a mouthful. And I bet you can't wait to get your hands on it with a name like that.
Yeah, really.
That's Pozzo, P-O-Z-Z-O.
Oh, okay. Pozzo.
Titular character, Pozzo.
Okay, that makes sense then, I suppose.
Well, no, yeah. It surely doesn't make any sense, but...
None of it makes sense.
Well, kind of like your other titles that have come out in the past.
Yeah.
Okay, so Pozzo, yeah. Jelly Crusade, give us a rundown of what this is about.
It's a demented puzzle game.
Okay.
I think that's the best way to describe it. It's a similar humor of what you would expect from the Tog Boys. And it's coming out on the first of the next month.
Is this out already? I'm looking at on Game Maker Games. Someone just seems to have done a review. Oh, wait a minute. Wow, this is...
This is the much-awaited remake of the 2005 breakout hit.
I was going to say, this looks a bit old at this point.
Yeah, I'd possibly check that link and see if it works.
Okay, and can I share this with the public, or...?
Certainly. Oh,
I don't know. Yeah, all right, go for it.
Okay, here we go. Hot and fresh out the kitchen.
This is the first time anybody's really... We streamed a very, very, very short playthrough last night on our artist's stream. And so
this little green guy and the yellow guy kind of remind me of Meatwad from not Super Time Force. What's the word I'm thinking of? It's got Frylock, Meatwad,
Aqua Teen. The other developer, his name is Laz or Stinko or the Big Bang Gamer. We're not really sure what he goes by.
Great names.
But he's also known as the Finnish Meatwad.
The fit and, seriously.
Yeah. So there's some correlation there.
Okay, so you have a Canadian, a New Yorker, and a Finnish person working on games all on one team.
Mm-hmm.
All right, diverse. I like it. So what's the idea behind Pozzo?
There is no idea.
Okay.
I hate to disappoint. There is no idea.
Hey, look, we've all got to start somewhere, so that's fine.
Yeah.
I just noticed that the popular user-defined tags for this product is strategy. Not puzzle, strategy. I like that. As GZ was saying, it's sort of because Barkley 2 is been on such a long, 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 long run, and so much of it is reliant on a person doing one part and another developer making another part of it. There's a lot of downtime, specifically with a lot of Barclay's mini games and little side quests and things. Okay. Pops that just sort of became, you know, came about specifically GZ and Laz the Finnish Meatwads free time, I guess, in between tasks of Barclay. So we so they turned it into a full game. And sweet. Tales of Games is happy to present it out to the world.
Well, it's about time it got out. Well, how long have you been working on this?
I don't know if I on and off, maybe 2 months. The thing is, the game structurally already existed because it had puzzles.
Yeah.
And then most of it was updating it to be modern, like HD graphics, slightly better levels, things like that.
We added teledildonics.
Can you explain what that is? It's like blast processing.
No. Teledildonics is slightly different. In the future of the world, when humans don't actually have physical contact with each other and their entire relationships are built online,
yes,
teledildonics will be the means with which you get physically intimate with another person by transmitting a signal or information from one person to the next person's apparatus, and that apparatus giving you gratification.
You guys have been watching entirely too much Demolition Man.
This game is possibly the first game, surely the first indie game, I'm going to guess, that features teledildonics support.
Teledildonics is what you call it.
Teledildonics, that is correct. So, Tales of Games is paving the way of teledildonics in your living room.
Yeah. So, I mean, surely you've seen the scene before in Demolition Man when Sandra Bullock...
Of course. Okay.
I've got this playing in the background now for people who've maybe never seen it before.
Yep.
That's one of my favorite scenes in that movie.
Right, because it's like such a foreign concept. At least 23 years ago when the movie came out. But looking at it today, and based on what you're saying, especially when you realize how many people have, not necessarily sexual relationships, but just, you know, social relationships online, like this is something that's completely practical.
That is correct.
I think we call it texting or sexting today, right?
So it's this sexting is the foreplay of this entire new way to express yourself intimately. And Paza's breaking the ice, let's just say.
Yeah, you got going deep with this one.
Yeah.
Paving the way to a dark future.
Yeah. A dark and gratifying future.
Okay, so you have a dark future. Let's go back to your past. What was the first well-known title that you gentlemen had worked on?
That was Barclay's Shut Up and Jam Gaiden.
Okay. Can you give us a quick background on how that got started?
Well, it got started with my brother and his online friend. My brother goes by Bort, and the other guy is CboyRD. And they started with a... we know each other by our screen names just as much. And, you know, this is before anybody ever met each other. Right. They started with a RPG Maker kind of concept, jokey game called Barclay Shut Up and Jam Gaiden, the unofficial sequel to the actual, I think originally Barclay Genesis game,
yeah.
Barclay Shut Up and Jam. And it was a joke and it was trash until... your boy GZ here stepped in, and I'll let him take over. He turned it from the RPG Maker swill that it was into, not that RPG Maker itself is swill, but the project itself was, and he turned it into Game Maker and the robust experience that is beloved by millions.
Yeah, at the time, RPG Maker wasn't too technical, and neither of them were too technical in terms of making games. So that was the big thing that the game was lacking. And how I got involved was I literally just played the demo like everyone else did. Like, I played it, I liked it, but I could see that there was a lot of issues with it. Yep. So that's when I got involved. And I think that was for the best, because a lot of indie teams out there, you know, not, you can't have all the skills. It's very rare for someone to have, you know, like Chef is great at music. He's great at writing. Brian, he's a legendary quest designer, let's say. The old Home Quest.
So he has lots of experience quest. Playing JRPGs growing up, I'm assuming.
Yeah, they're both obsessed. I would say probably of all, I am the least experienced when it comes to games. So that's how like we balanced each other out.
Okay.
They had the more arcane RPG knowledge, and I had more skills.
Tech savvy.
Skills, yes, that's correct. And that's how it got made.
Okay, so you had this, you know, silly idea for an old game based on Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam from the you know, SNES and Genesis era, which, by the way, I rented at Blockbuster about 20 years ago. And I was somewhat disappointed because it's kind of like an NBA Jam knockoff, you know?
Yeah, I also rented it, and it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, well, it's like almost, actually, it's definitely better than the game Michael Jordan had. It's like Michael Jordan Trouble in Windy City. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, that. Chaos in the Windy City. Well, that's half of the sprites in one. Come from Chaos in the Windy City.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, that game, I rented that thinking, oh, I love Michael Jordan. Space Jam is the shit. And then all of a sudden I go to play it, and you're just like lobbing basketballs at people the entire time. It was so bad.
Well, not it's the entire hard, time. Dude. Did you know that it's you hard. Can also throw baseballs in it?
No, really?
Yeah, you can throw baseballs in it.
Oh, this is like during that one-year hiatus when he left the NBA to try a career in the MLB.
Yeah, a little Easter egg there.
He'd
throw a baseball.
Wow. Yeah, and to think like this was a, I guess, a triple-A title of its time, too.
Yeah.
Kind of ridiculous. Okay, so you have sprites from these games and silly idea. Loved RPGs growing up. And I guess how did you either of you get involved? Like, who started it? How long across the way did you guys, you know, get involved in all this, get your hands on it?
Well, for me, it was, I probably got involved like 3 months after the game's like inception.
Okay.
And then it probably took another year to finish. And I mean, part of the reason also that we used, like, beyond being funny using Rift graphics.
Yeah.
We didn't have any artists on the team. Like, we had people who were contributing.
Yep.
Like, two of the people who contributed graphics ended up working on Barkley 2. But, I mean, it's hard to get people, you know, convince people to work on a joke game
right.
for a year. So, stealing graphics was our best option at that point.
Yeah, definitely. And were you ever worried, you know, about someone kind of bringing the ban hammer on you or, you know, getting upset?
I think that's the biggest misconception out there. Like, I'm sure everyone's heard stories about games being shut down.
Yeah.
But I think that's it's
Nintendo.
Yeah, but I mean, it's so easy to change graphics. Like, I couldn't understand anyone ever being worried about something like that. Like, if anything did happen, it wouldn't be hard for us to replace stuff.
Right, because a lot of it, you know, I guess it tends to be placeholder. Also, one guy looks like Gary Payton, Balthios.
That's from, honestly, I don't know what the avatar is from, but what was the game? Man, we just...
Excalibur?
Excalibur.
2047 or whatever it's called. Yeah.
Oh, God. This is great. And I grew up loving basketball. So I live right outside of Philadelphia. Charles Barkley, like, obviously a local hero here because he played for the 76ers. He actually has a place about one block away from me, too. But he spends most of his time in Atlanta. It's just funny to see people kind of, you know, pick the round mound of rebound as, you know, like the main focus for such a bizarre game.
Yeah, none of us actually care that much about basketball. That's another thing that we pointed out.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things not to, there's a lot of, obviously there's a lot of humor in it, but a lot of people ask us, like, what, you know, like, how did you guys come across, you know, why Charles Barkley? Why Charles Barkley? And it's sort of like, man, you know, Barkley versus Godzilla was out, you know, came out, you know, 10 years before, 20 years before this game, right? So, like, I mean, Barkley is, he's pretty, it's pretty rich. It's fertile ground for that kind of thing. So it was definitely not like a flash of genius necessarily from that end. It was more, I mean, I think just the idea, the name Gaiden is funny.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
And then after that, it just sort of fell into place. I think the real appeal of the game is that why would anyone not choose Charles Barkley, but why would anyone go and make a game that takes 7 hours to beat about based on one not good joke, right? The joke is not actually funny.
It's like one of the most dank memes of all time.
It's a dank meme. Yeah,
took it to the next level.
But yet it took GZ, who is like the fastest programmer in the world, a year to make when you could have gotten the same effect in a month.
Right.
By doing the same thing. And but
that's dedication.
That's hence a good segue into Barkley too. That's why Barkley is taking 5 years to make.
Yeah,
or so, technically only four. We're still at four.
Okay.
Taking a while because what good is a game that takes 3 years and just delivers on exactly what we promised when we can make a game that takes 6 years and just goes way, 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 way too far.
Well, so you guys are going the opposite of this, the No Man's Sky approach, you know, where you promise the world, come out with the game pretty fast, and then deliver on half of it. You guys are doing just the opposite.
Well, and there's actually nothing wrong with that at all. And surely Barkley will have... I think Barkley 2 is going to be crazier and definitely more insane than what we promised, but there will surely be some stuff that we promised that aren't in the game.
Yeah.
100%. Because we have, you know, when you pitch a game or when you talk about a game that doesn't exist yet from a developer standpoint, you're just pointing to drawings on a whiteboard. You're not actually pointing to code that actually functions. So definitely there will be some things that are not in there that we thought were really cool. And man, we cut stuff out every day now. But I think that looking back at what the Kickstarter was, I guess, promising, if you want to use that word. Okay. But what we were attempting to create, I think we've created something that, as long as it gets all the way through without crashing for everyone that plays it, it'll be a pretty wild experience.
So, I mean, how long did you start on the journey for Barkley 2?
Pretty much 4 years ago, like today.
Holy
we decided about this time, like we started kind of in September, August, September. We're like, you know what? Let's do a Kickstarter. You know, if Broken Age or whatever the hell it's called, Double Fine, whatever. If he can do it, we can do it.
Yeah.
And so we hopped on that train and rode that gravy train. But yeah, I think we got good enough to do it as well. Our artist, Frankie, who drew the final sprite in the game, he drew Shadow Barkley, the final boss. Spoilers.
Prince of Persia.
He's now amazing, right? Yeah, he's now amazing. Oh yeah, Shadow. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got one wing like Sephiroth and all that kind of stuff.
Ah, gotcha.
He's now amazing, and the best pixel artist in the world. And so he was ready to work on it. We got better. The finish meat wad was ready to start. He started as our main coder, and I was going to like try and like full-time produce it, and we were ready to go. Granted, the game has gotten big and people have come and gone, but we're still trucking along.
So how many people total have been working on this over the last 4 years?
About like 10, 15, somewhere more than 10.
Okay.
And believe it or not, GZ actually didn't even start. He came in and saved the project, just sort of like he did with Barkley 1. And so now he's on a full time. But it started with Laz working on it, and then we went through a few different coders who, because the game just got so big, they had, you know, they've been going around doing other things. So now we sort of have two full time coders. We have Laz doing his coding stuff and all the stuff he does, map building and things.
Okay.
Then we have Seaboy still does music, and Brian Bort still does quest design and stuff like that. So that core group is there. And then, of course, we have a few artists that have come and gone. We have another coder who's making the mini game, the big standalone mini game, which is another thing we're releasing. Mm-hmm. It's gets big and big and big.
Okay, so quickly 15, got larger than you hoped it would be.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It blew up right away.
That's actually part of the reason why I actually didn't start out on Barkley 2, because I was clued in. Actually, there was a lot of Barkley 2 was already decided when Barkley was being made. Mm-hmm. Chef and Brian already had it planned out the base of it, and I knew it was extremely ambitious, so I stayed away. I kept my distance.
Yeah.
And I waited it out until it I waited for the opportune moment to. Liam's actually the one who got me back into it, because honestly I thought because a lot of people were working at it, I had the assumption that things were going fine. But the thing is, Barkley's just such an ambitious game. The thing that I think lacked the most is just someone who could understand general aspects of everything.
Right.
And that's more or less what I do. I do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that, and that's key, because a lot of the stuff in the game, everything is very segmented. Someone will work just on this part or just on that part, but then you need someone who can link it together. So that's more or less what I'm doing.
Greasing the wheels.
Yeah.
Ah, it's a very good way of looking at it. And any of you worked on games before this? Do you work on games for a living right now?
Well, I used to do games on Xbox Indie. And
oh, nice. Xbox Live Indie Games, XBLIG.
Yep.
Awesome.
Your name sounds familiar, but I don't exactly know. Were you just a community guy?
I started the same way, making games on Xbox Indie Games. And then mm-hmm. I helped coordinate. We had a summer uprising and a winter uprising, mm-hmm. Where we essentially got 10 developers together every year to market their games with Microsoft. We did that, got the word out about it, and then years later I was hired by Microsoft to work with game developers. So that's what I do now.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing is Xbox Indie had a really bad reputation amongst indie developers, but I thought it was great for me. I made games on it for, I think, 2 or 3 years. And that was paying my bills for those 2 and 3 years.
Right.
But the thing is, I think with a lot of indie developers, and I fell into the same trap, is you always want to do better than the last project. And when that happens, it's very easy to not release stuff consistently. Right. And that's the big problem. So basically, I was consistently releasing. I think I released 8 games on Xbox Indie. And then I decided, I got to do something big here. And then that's kind of another reason why I got back into Barkley 2. Because, I mean, if you want to make a big game, you got to work with other people.
Absolutely.
And I saw that Barkley 2 already had stuff. And there's some talented folks on Barkley 2, so I thought it was a good move.
No, definitely a good move. And so what's interesting with the Xbox Live Indie Games is, like you said, it didn't always have the best perception from developers or even gamers on the outside, but I mean, plenty of careers got started with this, a lot of games, and it was at a time where this wasn't available to other people, right? iPhone and Android were just coming out. But if you tried to explain to someone 10 years earlier, hey, for $100 on your retail console, you can make a video game and be a full-fledged developer, it would have blown people's minds.
Yeah, they blazed the trail.
Seriously.
I think probably part of the problem was the fact that it actually was too, like you were saying, it was almost too open in a way. The fact that it was so easy and people really didn't realize how powerful it could be.
Yeah.
I think if it would have attracted, because I think the problem is it didn't attract enough experienced developers. A lot of people It just got people who were starting with Xbox Indie. But yeah, a lot of people's careers got started. I mean, Silver Dollar Games,
yep,
they ended up doing well. And there's a bunch of other guys too. I know Ska Studios, they yep. did well on Xbox Indie. So I am... The Xbox Indie certainly had its problems, but I give it a thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
No, that's fair to hear, folks.
Yeah, terribly undercredited business. But then, you know, even Microsoft didn't quite know how to manage it, so it kind of fell under. But fortunately, we have things like, you know, Xbox Live Arcade today, Xbox One, you know, indie program through ID at Xbox. Sony has a fantastic program. Nintendo still has one through the Wii U, but developer support is questionable at times. Mm. And now you have Steam, which just absolutely owns the indie game developer market.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I joined Steam pretty late, considering, like, this Pause was my first technically Steam game. So I'm really late to the game when it comes to Steam. But it's crazy. Like, I mean, how the auto-updating works, how it has the storefront. Yep. You can have, like, if I send an email to someone for press, I can just give them that link instead of having to make, you know, a website for that. So it makes things 100 times easier. Steam is, as far as I can see, it's I couldn't imagine anyone not using it.
Yeah, right. I mean, it has like a simple C++ API that you can talk to and tie into. Yeah, I guess the only concern for most people now with something like Steam is the lack of visibility, but largely because it's so flooded with so many games. So no one's really ever been able to solve the issue of how do you surface the quality content, not only that, but the content that I would like to see or you would like to see, you know?
That's why we're taking advantage of that with Pazzo, Jello Crusade, because you can look at Pazzo and you have no idea whether it's quality or not, and that benefits us. That benefits Pazzo.
That's good. So so what are your plans right now? I mean, you have Pazzo coming out, Pazzo, within the next week or so, and then Barkley 2.
September 1st. Idea.
September 1st.
Barkley 2 is November 11th, 2023.
Okay. 2023.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, so set your calendar. That's tentative, though. Tentative. It may get pushed back.
Yeah.
It may get pushed back. We'll see. We're actually trying to get everything in the next few months.
Okay.
The game won't be done in the next few months, but everything will be in the next few months.
Nice.
We have a million more months of work.
That makes sense to me.
So
yeah, there's been a big push recently to get all of the game content done in these next few months. So, and I mean, not even just the game content, but like the key game systems that aren't fully working how they need to work. So that's the big thing that we're doing. Like when we started out, a lot of it was just, you know, doing a little bit of this, doing a little bit of that.
Yep.
And it's fun to do that, to, you know, do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that, but you have to do the hard work too. So now we're doing the hard work.
Yeah, it started out pretty nebulous as far as the development was concerned. We would kind of just stake a claim. You know, we would build a menu that surely wasn't going to be the menu that makes it to the release, but something that does it and doesn't crash. And but more than just a developer cheat menu or something like that, like a tool, definitely an end user facing menu.
Right.
And we were also, since the development is so long, we've been kind of faking a bunch of systems for showing it at conventions, shown at in the Indie Mega Booth a few times at PAX. And so we've added some stuff in, but that's all now getting to the point. It was great at first to show, like, exactly as a proof of concept what we were attempting to do with the game.
Yeah.
But now we're actually throwing all that crap out and making these things for real, which is surely solidifying those nebulous areas that we were working on before. So,
Do you plan on showing it again? Are you coming to the upcoming PAX West in a few weeks?
We're not. No, not to PAX West. We're skipping that one.
Okay.
And because we're in content crunch time,
but
we'll definitely do one more thing. One more show.
Okay. And like there's a million pack shows now. So you have, you know, South and Australia and God knows wherever else. So you have plenty of opportunities at this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll do one more. One more packs for sure, and then we'll release the game onto the masses.
Right, so I'm always curious what people's experience is like on Kickstarter. You guys obviously had a very successful Kickstarter several years ago. Tell me, what was the most difficult part of it, and how you've been managing expectations and communicating with people since then?
Well, now we're not. We're not communicating or managing expectations.
So is that the best approach then?
Well, no, not really. I mean, the problem, going back to that nebulous thing, one of our big problems is that first of all, we're making a game that is very difficult to show a vertical slice of, because a vertical slice is completely gigantic.
Right.
And so a lot of the times, and we surely take for granted the fact that our Kickstarter backers are patient, which they are, tremendously so, but we are mindful about, what we would used to do is we would start to update. Be like, oh, check out these cool guns or whatever. And then a month would go by and then we'd be like, all right, now what do we update with? And we're like, well, we're in the middle of these menus, but these menus aren't actually going to be in the game. So we just sort of stopped. So far, the backlash has been very minimal, thank God.
Okay.
Surely people are every once in a while, you know, like upset and like, oh, this game's never coming out, which is perfectly fine. And they have every right to believe that because we don't update. But we know the game, you know, this is the only thing we work on besides Pazzo, which, you know, was, you know, kind of made parallel with it. So it is definitely still being worked on. And kind of my policy and sort of my policy, there's definitely been some dissension and discussion about this, but I've just been trying to, once we start updating, I don't want to stop. And it's really a pain, or, you know, it's embarrassing to like be like, check it out, guys, we're really excited, we're going to show you all this stuff, and then not have anything for the next week or not have anything.
Yeah.
And so that's been, but it's been easy because no one's really freaked out, right? We haven't gotten in, you know, a war with our backers at all, thank God. So everybody's been really great and really patient. And, you know, it's just a VidCon when it comes down to it. Yeah. These are all just video games. So it's not that big of a deal. So I think everybody understands that.
Okay.
So,
I mean, one other thing I'd also like to point out is the fact that there is actually, this is, you know, going off of an original game. Like there's a lot of Kickstarters where it's just some people who've never made a game before. I would say, like, between people who've worked on Barclay 2, there's probably like 50 games that have been made. Like, I've made 20. Frankie's probably made 30 or something crazy amount. Laz has made like 10. And we've been doing this for a really long time. So it's not a lot of people, I think, especially the newer teams, they'll go on Kickstarter. Game development is really, really, really hard. And someone who hasn't made a game or even yet a game of length, you know, something that took more than, let's say, 6 months, the amount of experience you need is just incomparable. I mean, it, like I said, Barclay, there's like 10 to 15 people have touched this project at one point or another. So, but there's a lot of experience in Barclay, and there's obviously ups and downs in development, but everyone is always pushing forward to get the game moving.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. I mean, I think a lot of gamers do not quite understand how much work goes into it, because you'll often see, you know, backlash on Facebook and Twitter. People say, well, why don't they just add this? It'd be so easy just to have this feature. And anytime someone says just or if only, you're like, whoa. I just want, you know, cross network, you know, multiplayer. I want to be able to play this on Xbox, on PlayStation, and PC.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've I don't think we've necessarily had the experience of any of our backers like demanding one thing or another. I mean, I think our Kickstarter was actually a pretty decent template where we don't offer a lot. We didn't offer a lot of actual creative design, you know, to the backers. They, you know, there's one guy or girl, a secret person, who is involved with one very specific aspect of the game. But other than that, it's all in-house. So it's not like we are looking for where, you know, we promised a lot of backer involvement in the game itself. I think that actually goes a long way. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are like, oh, have your character and have your name in the game and that kind of stuff is that I think begets a lot more interest for sure. But then also it's a sort of two edges, as they say. And, it will, you know, people will be waiting. Hey, when are you going to put my character in the game, or when are you going to get my quote, or whatever? And so we've kind of that. No, we just have the stupid art book. Well, we'll just crap out an art book right before the release.
Yeah, there you go. Got to monetize somehow. what I do love is you have a blog post from May 29th this year, and you talk about rifles, but more importantly, you're talking about the game view. And I look at this, and right away, I love the art that you have. You know, where you're doing the pixel height analysis in Markley 2. I love how you're drawing that out. And as you're looking at this, I see, okay, they're going out of Titan Souls, a game I'm familiar with too, and you see how much further out the perspective is. But as I'm looking at your picture, I'm thinking, wow, this reminds me so much of the Chaos Engine. And then sure enough, and I see it. Man, you guys are spot on. It's definitely a talent what you have in that you can create your own tool and art or whatever, and then right away it's instantly recognizable to people who you know, also understand the technology. So
I think Chaos Engine, or as we know, it's Soldier of Fortune. I think one of the interesting things about Barkley 2 specifically is that there really isn't another game that looks like it. And we've had some, and then for real reasons, like as we've designed combat and things like that, the game is really, really, really zoomed in, right? It's the characters are huge for a top-down game. And and there's reasons why games aren't made that way.
Yep.
It's very, very difficult to do. And so surely the game has been affected by that. It feels really weird to fight. It feels different than pretty much any other top-down game that I know of, besides probably Chaos Engine. And so I think that's to its merit, though, is that it's such a striking view of like what a top-down game could be, because they're pretty much in 20 years there's been one game that did that.
your view is like, you know, very skewed from looking at it, this angle and the height and everything.
Yeah, that and Zombies Ate My Neighbors is those are the only two games that we know of that really, really, really look like that.
Yeah, so you see how limited you are at the number of pixels you have, only 384 by 240,
right?
Yeah, so not a lot to work with there.
It's great doing mock-ups, though, because you don't have to worry about, I can do most of the menus myself, I mean, as far as mock-ups are concerned, because I don't need to worry about any kind of design or, you know, art piece on it, because they're all just going to be square, because that's all we can afford, because the screen's so small. So, but yeah, I was hoping that somebody would be interested in that, because I wasn't totally sure if screen size meant anything to somebody, but it's definitely one of the bigger contributors to exactly how the game feels is how close in we are. But it gets to show off Frankie's gorgeous pixel art.
Yeah, and the game dev community loves this kind of stuff. When you drop this into, you know, the game dev subreddit, and it'll gain a lot of attention. That's why I often tell, I work with students and developers who are just coming up. And they say, oh, I worked on this game for years, I released it, and 10 people downloaded it. What do I do? What did I do wrong? And I always say, get the word out early. So what you're doing with, like, you know, almost this development blog is perfect, because it engages people who, maybe you're not selling it to me or you know, the people who fit my profile, but at the same time, I see the development of it, and I'm instantly intrigued. And me and my friends or people similar background would want to dive into this and play the game, if for no other reason, to see, okay, how does this compare to how they were developing it? And I want to see what the tricks of the trade were that they were using. So
yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah, so keep going. The more you market and talk about what you're doing specifically on the technical side, the larger your audience grows. So
get ready for the Barclay 2 postmortem. That's gonna be a son of a bitch.
2024 or what?
Yeah, it's gonna be. We're gonna have all kinds of stuff to tell people what not to do.
All right, so now
make a really big game.
Now we're coming around the home stretch. What I typically do at the end of a show is I'll ask a question that came from the last guest. And last week, I took about 2 months off during the summer. I had some folks from Mortal Kombat on. Actually, a gentleman who played a lot of the main characters. So Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Johnny Cage. So Daniel Messina was one of the actors there. And then we also had Peck Pompeii, who had done motion cap for the early 2000 Mortal Kombat games. So typically, I have people ask a question, and I have the next guest answer it, but I made a mistake. The last episode, I forgot to ask them a question.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Okay.
So I have no question for you guys, unfortunately. But I will ask that you ask a question for the next guest who will be on. And I don't know who that is just yet, but ideally game development related. What is your question?
What's your favorite Final Fantasy character?
Oh, man. Okay.
And if so, what is their blood type?
I did play a lot of Final Fantasy VII growing up, and I had this big guide from Prima Games, so maybe they had some information there about all those characters.
Yeah, what's Barrett's blood type?
Yeah, well, you guys are definitely Final Fantasy.
I already know, because the answer is always unknown.
Yeah, right. And so it's interesting you even bring that up about the blood type. I had read this book probably about a year ago, also backed on Kickstarter. It was called The History of Japanese Game Developers. It is fantastic. Let me pull this up on the browser real quick of Japanese game developers. And Untold History of Japanese Game Developers. That's what it was. It came out about 2 years ago, and this developer, journalist, interviewed dozens and dozens of developers, often through a translator. And at the beginning of every chapter, which covers different developer, he has, you know, the name, the age, and I think like the location of the developers, but also their blood type. I could not figure that out why.
Yeah,
and I read somewhere
go.
A while ago that for some reason in Japan, that's a very popular thing to share. I have no idea why. I've only
I actually read about this 2 months ago, and I'm going off of very scant knowledge that I read, but I believe it has something to do with personality. So depending on what blood type you have, O negative, for instance, would be you're dark and mysterious, and AB positive means, you know, you're very energetic or something like that.
You always find a reason to help people.
Yeah, you always find a reason to help people.
So is this like
that's something to do with personalities?
You asked in Barclay 2, there's a huge create a character, takes 30 minutes, you can die in it. And in the beginning, you are asked your blood type. It's one of the most important things about the game.
Well obviously. Well, okay, let me ask you one final question before we get out of here then. Have you heard of, what was it called? Time to Crate? Time to First Crate? Have you heard this before?
Oh yeah, Time to First Crate. Yeah. We're actually adding that in today. I was talking about our crate guy.
Oh, perfect. You know, I was wondering if you had a crate guy on your team, and it's great that you have someone who can specialize in such a way. You know, because the fact of the matter is, right, all great games contain crates. Therefore, all games can be judged empirically on these crates. So a common question is, you know, how long does it take from the time you start that game to when you see your first crate? Now, certain games like Deus Ex or perhaps Half-Life, maybe it's 5 minutes. But other games might be several hours. So it's always important to kind of get it out there, because these crates are truly the most underappreciated and represented parts of game development.
Our game starts on a crate.
Well, perfect. You figured it out. So you're actually gaming the system by doing this. And what are your thoughts on having a category like that, maybe in Steam or in iPhone sales, right? Instead of indie or RPG, it should just be start to crate.
Yeah, well, we have an achievement is when you find the crate, you get a chivo, a crate chivo. So
perfect.
It's in there. Yeah, time to crate is very important to us as developers. Okay, and we're pushing the limit at all times. with new technology, with higher frames per second, will keep getting closer and closer and closer to instantaneous crate viewing.
Yeah, well,
but right now, Barkley runs at 17 frames per second. So right now, we're a little slow.
Yeah, pushing the limits.
We'll get there.
All right, well, gentlemen, thank you very much again for joining. And before we go, do you have any social media links you'd like to hand out? Twitter, how can we follow you? How can we reach out to the folks behind this gem?
Just keep a lookout for our second Kickstarter, Barkley 2, to finish it. Barkley 2 Kickstarter, the first one, and Tales of Games on Twitter. We'll start updating fairly soon, or a little longer than you think.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, guys. And that's it for this time. And I'll see you on the next episode of the Indie Dev Podcast.